This is Talk of Asian Marketing with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior.
Welcome to Talk of Asian Marketing. In today's show, we're going to focus on some of the research issues related to our previous show on hypermarket service. And we'll spend a little time talking about some of the research that we've done on this issue and how that worked out. My name's James Stanworth, and I'm really excited to be with you again today. And also the co-host is Clyde Warden. Do you want to just say hi, Clyde?
Hello.
Okay, that's real brief. That gets us straight into what we're going to talk about. And let me just begin by linking back to our previous show and some of the issues that we talked about there. And what we were seeing, both Clyde and I, which was interesting, was that going to Tesco, we got a lot of very close in, very much personal and focused sort of service right throughout the store. So you want to go find something in Tesco's, people would stop what they were doing, take you, show you, and make sure that you had found what you needed before pulling away. And that was very typical, very standardized part of the way they worked. And it seemed to contrast in a pretty big way to what you get in some of the local stores like RT Mart. And the service there was tending to focus a great deal on the end of aisle demonstrators, very minimal service. You want to find something in store, then people almost look shocked if you ask to find it. And as we talked about as well in some of the previous shows focused on hypermarket, we can see that the very much the service scapes, the product ranges in these different stores was very, very different. Tesco's has a lot of imported products, foreign products, what we might call almost exotic products to Asia, whereas RT Mart tended to focus very much on the local end of the range.
Yeah, almost totally local.
Totally, totally local, and really tuned into what local consumers wanted. So big fresh area where people would get in, get involved with the fresh produce, and lots of that Renau buzz around the shopping experience. So it really led us just through observation to say, how could we start to measure some of those differences, kind of quantify what people's perception was of service in these very contrasting product service environments.
Well, I think, James, let me interrupt you there. When we started this, this was, 2 years ago we started this research?
Yeah, it must be now, Clyde. You know, time moves real fast.
Yeah, it does. I think that question back then really was, it seemed easy. It seemed like a no-brainer. And I think this is a important point that a lot of researchers kind of make a mistake at the beginning. You know, a research project is made to answer a question, and the question you ask really influences the kind of output you're going to get. And so you got to be careful about that. And I think at the beginning it was a no-brainer. You know, we see Tesco here has this kind of service emphasis, and we see RT Mart, for example, very localized, doesn't. And from the show we just finished, it would seem that this is a real no-brainer. I mean, it should be obvious that consumers are going to have a very favorable reaction. But I think we approached that question very cautiously, didn't we, James?
Absolutely. I think that's just such a crucial point that it, at a service level, it seems so intriguing because it seems such a no-brainer. You've got one store that had come in and bought a very intense service focus, that's won them lots of awards, both in the countries they operate in and at home. In fact, it was really the key to success in the UK was their service orientation. And they brought that to the Taiwan market, and it just contrasted in such a massive way that it seemed to be a no-brainer. It seemed to be something that people would just latch on to. But yet, you've got a local store that had been here now for at that stage for a great many years, was doing clearly really well, and that really suggested that there's something else had to explain it, and that's what we really wanted to dig into with the research. And a very obvious way to sort of measure it, we went and to look for particular scale measurements, and in the service sector, I mean, the classic model for measuring service focuses around the ServQual model developed by Parashurman and his research associates. And quite rightly, that's been criticized, particularly for its lack of industry specificity. I dread to think what Chinese would make of that word. It's hard to pronounce. It has been customized a little bit more for the hypermarket sector by Debolka, and that's what I think particularly you homed in on immediately, Clyde, is a good measurement option.
Yeah, we really needed a measurement instrument that matched the hypermarket setting much more than just a general service. Otherwise, the consumers, the people, the respondents would just have a no compute. They wouldn't understand what we're talking about.
And so that made real sense. And we having recognized that the major group of hypermarket customers are not those in the 18 to 30 range, but the 30 to 40, 45-year-old. So we faced an issue of trying to make sure that we're really sampling that critical group. And we were lucky in that we have a large IMBA, MBA program that we're both associated with. And these people are working. They're pretty much in the target group. And they work with large groups of people that are also in that target age range. So that provided a great opportunity to reach out to the right target sample.
Yes, yeah, so we were able to develop a survey instrument that we then could use a snowball approach to. And we did have a small coupon we gave people for answering the survey, which was mailed back to us. So I think that, you know, we got a pretty good sampling as far as the demographics of who shops there. And we did ask specifically to have specific people who shop at those locations, such as RT Mart shoppers and as Carrefour shoppers and Tesco shoppers. So I think we were able to get a pretty good handle on that. Of course, you always wish you could get a bigger sample and a more random kind of sample. But here I think we wanted to get the specific shopper shopping at the specific store. Isn't that right, James?
That was a big deal. And I think the snowball approach and making it very clear up front that the survey was related to a very specific store, I think was really important. And using the snowball technique certainly offered in that personal contact where we could brief people very specifically on this point, I think probably offered the most economical and valuable way to try and really make sure that we're hitting the right people. So as you say, you can always look for a more random sample, but I think the trade-off was going to be in terms of the risk of not quite getting the feedback from the people that we were really wanting.
Yeah, we did end up getting a pretty good response rate. We did get a lot of our sample back and a lot of feedback. We did do some training in the class, remember? We got people to understand how to do it and how to consult with the respondents, how to give the reward and how to get the information back. It was a pretty good result, actually.
Yeah, I think it's a favorable result, and clearly maybe the use of coupons was quite helpful in that regard.
Definitely.
And you've quite a lot of experience in this
I'm always very suspicious of any survey given in Asia, especially in Chinese cultural settings, that doesn't have a coupon. And it's really related to what we talked about at the end of the last show, which is, you know, people are really value-driven in Chinese culture. That is, the time equals money thing is kind of a basic genetic code that people really follow. And if somebody tells me they got volunteer respondents, I'm really suspicious about who they were and how they got them. People really look at that, you know, what am I getting for this? And I think that, you know, the idea we were talking about, people are drawn to those free things. If you have a coupon, people get drawn to it, and that really draws people in. And it wasn't super cheap. I think it was a 100 NT coupon from McDonald's or Starbucks. Do you remember the exact numbers and the stores we used?
I think it was 7-Eleven coupon. So it's very that lots of people use. Very easy to exchange.
Well, because it's president, UniPresident, they can use the coupon at any of their kinds of stores. So not only is it 7-Eleven, it can be used at Starbucks also.
So people almost perceive it as money because it's 7-Eleven is so ubiquitous. It's where everyone's going. So it's a really, I think it's a part of that trade-off.
100 NT would be over $3, like $3.50. So to that, I would think it was a really good value.
Yeah, for people that translates maybe into a good lunch or maybe a couple of good snacks. So it was fairly attractive. I think the other thing that we sort of talked about after we'd done a certain amount of pilot testing just to check that the instrument was easy to understand and that we were satisfied that the respondents were addressing things in the right way. And one issue that came out as a concern was the potential central tendency at the fact, a couple of issues. One was the fact that people seemed to focus or graduate perhaps towards the central point on a 5-point scale.
This is certainly my experience. Yeah, all the surveys we've been doing over the last decade, we find people have a tendency to go to the central scale. And I think I've read in a number of papers, and including psychology by people like Bond, that, you know, Chinese tend to not want to be extreme. They want to fit into the group. And surveys already have that problem where you're pushing people to get an answer. And, of course, in a Chinese cultural setting, you know, people want to give you the answer you want. And also there's a certain training and education system to give the correct answer and also not to stand out. So you very rarely get extremes and people tend to go central. So I personally never give a survey in the Chinese cultural setting that includes a central choice. I always use the even numbers, so you have to go off of the central choice.
Yeah, forced choice ranking either side. Yes, and so that becomes quite an issue that has to be thought about. And I think the other issue was the surprise over the midpoint, because often the midpoint on a Chinese scale, when you look at it in Chinese, is not really a midpoint at all. Where we think of, if you're on a 5-point scale, we think of 3 as maybe, if we're talking satisfied, and we've got an extreme very dissatisfied and on the other extreme very satisfied. So the midpoint we'd naturally think of as, well, neither satisfied nor dissatisfied. Whereas typically when people create a local scale in Chinese, it's not usually that, and people will often say, well, maybe it's a no view.
Normal Chinese way, and this is everyone's used to it, and so people follow it without critically thinking about it. Even high-end researchers, you know, just fall right into this trap. And the normal central choice for Chinese is mei yi zhen. And mei yi zhen means I have no opinion. And of course, if you then throw this into your SAS or SPSS program with no opinion in the central, you're giving a score to something that actually should have no score. So you're pulling in, you're influencing the mean score. But, you know, what's the point here? What is the actual opinion? There is supposedly none. And combine that with the tendency to say mei yi zhen, which is a normal Chinese phrase given almost all the time. You know, well, mei yi zhen. What would you like to eat for dinner? Well, mei yi zhen. How would you like, who do you think should be elected to be the head of our new department? Well, mei yi zhen, even though I may have a strong feeling. So that kind of social pressure combined with what I think is methodologically a questionable approach is very troublesome.
It is. And as you say, it's a classic problem doing scaling across languages as well, because as you say, people that get so indoctrinated and so habituated to seeing that midpoint as meaning one thing in Chinese, and then your anticipated labeling of it, say, in English, and then that's translated into Chinese, then you're really misleading yourself potentially on the sort of results you're going to get back.
Exactly.
So I think that's a subtle but important difference that really can have a big impact.
Exactly. I think everyone needs to be concerned with it, but in a Chinese cultural setting, which is where we do our work, it it has that added problem. So we really pay attention to this, and I almost never use a central choice.
Yes, that's clearly one option to address this rather thorny kind of problem. So that led us, once we'd gone through some of these issues, that led us to what we've talked about is quite a fairly satisfactory data collection phase. And we ended up with a reasonable sample that covered all the different stores. And it was quite some torture to analyze the data, but once we'd gone through that process, maybe there's something you want to add on that analysis phase.
Yeah, James, we were looking at 17 items on the Bulker scale, and we adopted those, and 11 of them were specifically related to retail settings, 5 were more physical aspects, reliability, personal interaction, problem-solving policy. Anyone who's interested should be able to download our paper and take a look at the details. But we did have, I think the main point is the instrument is more specific to the retailing context. And so we put that into our SPSS, and we tried to check out some of the means and some of the standard deviations, which are reported again. And then we went ahead with the factor model. And in this case, we did something a little bit special. We had a hierarchical factor model, and we have 3 levels in that factor model. And so it was a little bit complicated compared to your regular factor analysis. But it was a really good concept, because the idea from De Balker's paper is retail service quality is not so one-dimensional that you just go down to this one level. Rather, there's multiple levels that influence each other coming up to the totality of the service quality. And I think, James, that kind of common sense makes sense, don't you think?
I think there's two sort of tracks of thought. One is typically that quality is a function of a variety of sub-factors that are summed into a single measure of quality. More recently, in fact, De Balker has suggested that quality can be measured as a single item construct, but most people feel fairly uncomfortable with that in the research literature. So the way that we're using here of multiple levels summing up to represent the one idea of quality seems much more established and much more useful from a management point of view, since you can home in onto specific areas of that require attention, or of course that management should carry on doing well on, performing well on. So it's a little bit more useful from both a management point of view and also from providing slightly broader and deeper research insights. So it was a useful approach, I think, that we'd taken. But I think it sort of became a little bit more difficult to work through as we got into the statistics, from what I remember, Clyde.
Well, I mean, it's obviously going to add complexity because we have multiple levels to the factor structure. So in this case, we just go with a structural equation model and we look at what we can get for the fit. And then we couldn't really line things up to be exactly the same as De Balker's results. And some of that could be our samples different. It could be our survey questions were a little bit misunderstood, or it could be just a different context that we're doing it in. And some of those questions don't add up. I think we were looking specifically at, you know, some of the things in De Balker's, like I think the credit card usage, phoning in to get service. Some of those things just didn't compute in Taiwan because nobody really thinks about them or does them. So that's an example of when you bring the survey over to a different setting, you know, things aren't going to always add up. But we were able to create a model that fit pretty well. We were not having 3 levels all through the model. If you look at the resulting structural equation model that we have physical aspects and personal interaction have sub-dimensions, whereas policy, reliability, and problem-solving do not have any sub-dimensions. They're just flat, those 3 dimensions by themselves. And like I said, that's just because of the difference. We suspect that's the difference in the setting of the retail situation and the cultural assumptions. And we did end up getting a pretty good fit on that model. Our chi-square was 168. And given the number of dimensions we have, I think it's pretty acceptable. Goodness of fit of 0.91, adjusted goodness of fit of 0.86. So I think we have a pretty good model. We are confident that the data from the survey was interpreted correctly by the respondents, and they understood that, and they responded in a way that kind of lines up with DeBalker's work. So we went ahead with those results, and we were quite happy with them.
Yeah, it was a good, once we'd reached that step, it was a satisfying result. And then what as we dug further into the analysis, it was kind of an interesting couple of things started to emerge. Let me just sort of go back through those interesting phases, because initially, as you've heard from our description in the other show, when we were talking about the stores, and the results emerged, they seemed to make a lot of sense. Customers were reporting their perception of quality of Tesco to be a lot higher than the other stores, so in other words, a lot higher than Carrefour or RT Mart, on all the dimensions of quality that we were measuring.
Which is kind of what we were just talking about in the previous show, right? Everybody,
exactly,
you walk in there, Tesco has this very up-to-date service system, so it made a lot of sense.
It just seemed to click really, really well with us. And then, naturally, a lot of researchers have said, but the important thing of when one's looking at service quality is that you start to think about how that translates into favorable customer behaviors. And, of course, one of the most important customer behaviors is their willingness to refer or even educate and teach other customers about the benefits of going to a particular service supplier. So our natural next step was to say, well, how does this perception of quality that we've measured link to those kind of what we call behavioral intentions, the intentions to, in this case, we measured it by thinking about their willingness to refer. And this is where things got a little bit interesting, because we suddenly realized that as we measured people's willingness to refer the store to other customers, to their friends, families, and so on, it was almost just literally the reverse situation. Right. In other words, customers of RT Mart were more willing to refer the store.
Yeah, James, that's the really interesting part. So if you just listened to our previous show, you would have thought, hey, everything is the way it looks to be. RT Mart, this local place, which kind of has a wet market feeling to it, kind of not such a great service emphasis compared to Tesco's, is great service emphasis and really loyal customers. But then the statistics were telling us something a little bit different, and that was really the interesting part. Yeah, higher referral for RT Mart, much lower referral for Tesco.
And I think the point that you've just touched on there sort of really links into the specifics of what we found, that the wet market really was really connected up to that physical environment that we were measuring and looking at. And the physical environment, by most standards, was pretty raw, pretty basic. The food section has that real wet market feel to it. The decor in store is very basic. And yet, it seemed to be what people really were relating well to. Courtesy as well was one of the key drivers of willingness to refer in RT Mart. And I think it was people were getting what they expected in the way of people's responses and reactions when they talked to service staff. And the final area that really pushed up referral for RT Mart was that of inspiring confidence. And I think this is the critical point, because RT Mart is fairly localized. People related well to the Chinese feeling within the store, within the servicescape, and then within the way that the staff interact with them. So there's lots of demonstrators, there's lots of people interacting, talking about the product, describing the different offerings to customers as they make their way through the store. It's not set up in that very organized way for a big shop where people are going in, organized, and leaving. It's set up much more for that casual walk through the store, finding
bargains.
Oh, even
their carts, like in the video we have, you have those really tiny carts. So it's made you just drop in, go to the vegetable section, get what you need for dinner, and check out.
Exactly. And someone's just there just to pack it up, help you get whatever you want, talk about the particular produce, and it's just really orientated in that way, and it gives it a real local sort of flavor. And so this really did start to make sense, and it also suggested that, you know, that local feeling was creating much more of an impact than some of the other dimensions that we'd expected would have done in the way that service was being delivered. The only one that stood out that was positive for Tesco was its physical environment with regard to parking, but that was no surprise. Parking's a big deal in Taiwan, and they offer both the huge car park, but also they offer 24-hour access, which made their accessibility in every sense very, very positive. Exactly. But in the other areas, in the softer areas of service, that Chinese feel that RT Mart had created, and the way service staff contacted customers, the way they talked about the product, really created that sense of confidence, I think. I think the other point that perhaps is relevant here is that we were looking at service quality, not satisfaction. And the two constructs are generally considered to be different. But maybe maybe it would have been useful in this study to have actually explicitly measured satisfaction as well and looked at that connection to referral. I don't know what you think on that issue, Clyde.
Well, I think the interesting point was we can see from the initial study, the initial numbers that came out, and then also our talking with customers and people we know who go shopping at different places, and contrasting that with the final findings. I think what you have here is a classic example of the research results you get are highly influenced by what you think the research question is. So if you went into this just asking the question of, you know, are people satisfied with Tesco, and you go talk to Tesco customers, I think you find out they really like the store. They were really satisfied.
Because they're self-selected, aren't they?
Exactly. These are Tesco customers, and they tended to be people who had been overseas, been to the UK, they come back to Taiwan, and they really liked it. I think when you and I were teaching at our IMBA down there at Chengda at the time, Cheng Kung University, lots of the foreign students told me they just love Tesco. It's just great. They can't imagine why it would not really be super successful in Taiwan. And they felt Carrefour was a little bit chaotic, and RT Mart, they're just like a dump. They would never want to go in there. And so, you know, this kind of...
In fact, sorry to cut in, I remember one manager saying it just looks like a dung heap. Yeah. That's the polite version.
Yeah, right.
Because, and he was a Western manager just exactly because of that, because it didn't seem to fit with the rational Western context of what makes a good store. So I think that's a real great point. Sorry to dive in there.
No, that's exactly what I'm talking about. So the customers of Tesco were really loyal, and I think if they were giving surveys, they would find that their customers are really satisfied, and they get caught up in the details of how to tweak their system to make those customers even more satisfied and happy. Whereas what we're finding is, yeah, that's great, but there's a whole nother huge market segment you're missing, and the tweaking may be just wasting your time and effort to tweak something in these small degrees for people who are already very satisfied. And so that word of mouth, you know, people are going to Tesco just weren't mixing with other people telling them, hey, this is a great place to go. And RT Mart, these customers were. And I think it's important to point out, Carrefour is at a nice in-between place. And I think that's been their strategy from the beginning.
Yes, I think that's dead on. And the way they've entered the market with a local partner has sort of brought them right to that central kind of position. Another point that's worth bringing up is the fact that we used a very much a Western established model of service quality, although it had been adapted, DeBolker had adapted it for the retail setting. But ServQual, the original service quality model that was used as the basis for that instrument, has been really heavily criticized for being culturally based in a Western understanding of service. And I think that was another issue that we faced here, that our measures of service quality were very defined from a Western point of view rather than from a Chinese cultural point of view.
I think that was really the problem with getting the structural equation model to totally fit the multidimensional levels. And so things like problem solving, policy, and reliability, these issues are so culturally different between the West and Chinese culture. I think it's obvious to us who have experience here, you know, the way problems are solved, the policy the store has. You know, obviously the questions need some tweaking. Maybe in the future, James, that's something we can work on.
Yes, I think it's a great avenue for research, the cultural, even though items can appear culturally equivalent, meanings can really be very, very different. The same word can have very different meanings in different situations. And I think that's another issue we faced. I think it's a real exciting research agenda.
Yeah, not to mention, you know, it's all relative, right? So when you ask something like, are the policies satisfactory? You know, of course, everyone can say, yeah, do you want to have good service? There's no culture where someone says, no, I don't. So you've got to really be careful and be embedded and really come back and keep grounding your observation, I think.
Absolutely. I think that's the real key here. And it's we teach in all our classes, and we're obviously exposed to the concept of culture. Yet it can be sometimes convenient to sort of ignore that as we hurry to get to measures of quality or measures of other issues in research, to really pretend that culture isn't going to have an impact. So it makes for a real exciting research agenda, and hopefully we'll bring some of those topics out in our next shows, Clyde.
James, can I ask you one question before we wrap it up then? Could you sum up then the title, When Right is Wrong, Chinese Retail Customers and Service Differentiation? Can you give us a soundbite that just sums that up? Because I think from a management perspective, I think our findings are really powerful.
When Right is Wrong, because from a Western manager's point of view, I think it's very easy to come in here and, like that quote we've just given, to say, wow, that local store just looks like an utter, well, we need the beep right there, because it just looks horrible. The service doesn't seem to be very smooth. And so we bring a mindset from the West that says, I'm going to create service that looks like the West and try and make it fit something here, because it must make sense. And that's exactly when what seems to be right is just that little bit wrong, and it doesn't yield the sort of results that people can really anticipate that it would based on their home country, deep-seated, and I think this is a key point, the deep-seated cultural perceptions of what is right. But then you come to a different culture and it becomes just that little bit wrong.
Makes sense. I couldn't say it better myself. I think it's exactly it. When it seems so right, it could be totally wrong, or just even a little bit wrong is enough to put people off. And I do think that Tesco was in a little bit of a mystery about, you know, why they just didn't have a larger draw.
Yeah, so why the draw wasn't going to turn into something enduring. Yes, I think that's key. Great. So hopefully on our next shows we'll bring these points out and elaborate on them further, Clyde.
Okay, James, thanks. See you next time.
See ya.
This is Talk of Asian Marketing, with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior. Oh.